Dissolution by Stefan Molyneux, freedomain.com. Chapter 4. Robert was always keen on making an entrance. Keen, as in keen edge, a bladed knife, a slicer and dicer of social status. He had once watched a young Asian man in a dark nightclub walk into a black pillar and still refused to take his thick sunglasses off. Robert had raised his beer in silent tribute as the man groped his way around the column and strode confidently into the rainbow, epileptic, dry ice. He was never quite sure where the impulse had come from and how it had hardened into his innards, but he always wanted to be cool, not sophisticated, and superior, and cold, and ironic, and amused. Narrowed eyes, a slight grin, side-swept hair, tight jeans, a black T-shirt, and a blowing Hawaiian shirt. Robert wanted to inhabit. This is a guy who... He never really wanted to answer that question, but more to have other people wonder. This is a guy who has access to a snow-white boat. This is a guy who's really good at cards, though he rarely plays. This is a guy who gets backstage at concerts. Ooh, this is a guy who can mogul on a ski hill. This is a guy who knows a cool guy in any cool city you care to visit. This is a guy who doesn't really date around, but who doesn't want to settle down. This is a guy who wins through silence. This is a guy who knows what an F-stop is and how to rechain a motorcycle. Robert wanted to sweep into rooms, particularly party rooms, like a Japanese rocket train, pushing all the turbulent air ahead of him, pulling all the focus and attention in his wake. He wanted charisma, not morality. He wanted to be envied for his status, not admired for his virtues. He fundamentally wanted approval, and so could never cause any trouble for the truly corrupt. Like most people addicted to being cool, Robert's mind constantly orbited his body, giving or stripping points for hip or cringe behavior. He was a living 3D calculus of high versus low status. So-and-so was embarrassing, must avoid. This other person was a value. Sidle up and exchange knowing glances. Robert liked women and had all of the standard-issue early 20s lusts, but women were mostly vanity accessories, there to make them both look good. He had a running joke with Derek, who constantly aimed above his sexual market value, that Derek would always be perceived as a security guard, not a boyfriend. Derek's view was that he was perfectly content to be an ironic dip-down for girls addicted to slumming and disappointing their vain parents, of course. Robert was considering joining a frat. Foolish for his last year, perhaps, but it could really help his career in the long run. And so he picked up Derek and went to a party at the house of Upsilon Zeta Alpha Pi. Derek was not a joiner, but he enjoyed a good mingle. He gravitated to the gamma group he referred to as the Oort Cloud, after the distant icy soup that birthed comets a third of the way to the nearest star. The Oort Cloud was composed of those oddities and quirkazoids, Derek's label, that hung around parties in a dank parallel universe that even the theater kids recoiled from. Derek was not part of the Oort Cloud, but enjoyed exploring their quirky lower intestine complications of reactive thoughts and raw, poked emotions. As Robert and Derek strode into the party, The wall of funk, both smell and music, slammed into them, invading nose and ears respectively. The clichés were endless, and endlessly comforting. It was always the same party, the same archetypes taking on the same roles. One empty soul animating 100 different indifferent bodies, like tentacles of pretend individuality, reaching out from the blind blob of a central, unformed body. There was the table dancing girl holding an empty shot glass while her top lurched dangerously, surrounded by the woo girls with their semi-snarling heads cocked to one side as they waved their skinny arms above their freshly shaved armpits. There was the guy who could actually grow a beard, who had a barrel-shaped body and back hair cresting his metal band t-shirt, who was always encouraged in alcoholism and sometimes fist fights. He was always called Moose, or Tiny, or Bruiser, or T-Rex. He never dated, but roared like a wildebeest and drank beers any which way but through the actual opening, shotgunning his way to legendary, lurching, Rasputin, still standing status. There was the sinister Dread Pirate Roberts guy, always dressed in black, who gave the impression of carrying disabling potions and powders in his medieval belt pouch. Girls drank near him at their peril. He always dropped a 20-sided dice at some point. Oh, there was the rare smoker, constantly waving a dangerous cigarette, who always seemed to be telling fishing stories. There was the GF Hunter, circling from girl to girl with increasing desperation, yelling into her indifferent ear as her cocktail eyes roamed the party looking for anyone, anything to escape the vague estrogen stench of his neediness. There was the Greek chorus of second-tier frat boys, roaring with forced laughter, telling improbably entertaining stories in a circle, who grabbed other men and gave them noogies as they struggled to get past, forcing laughter from clearly annoyed betas. There were the "I was so drunk" guys who shouted that no good story ever started with "I had a salad," and who took surreal pride in informing anyone in the vicinity that they woke up once because someone at a party had tried to take their beer. They talked about their annoyance at anyone at a cottage who suggested Pictionary or Twister instead of listening to Red Hot Chili Peppers while half-dozing on the wavy dock of infinite hangovers. All enthusiasm for intellect, clarity, or sober socializing was mocked and attacked like an alcoholic antibody fighting any and all infections of authenticity. Ah, yes. Even though they were not invited, there were the theater kids, of course, hiding out at the bottom of the garden, hoping that their dank and brooding mysteries would somehow draw girls down to their apocalyptic Eden, and that their Diet Cokes might be mistaken for absinthe. They sneered at the wastoids and strove for endless superiority in their bottomless irrelevance. They had no social power, and so worshipped at the bloody altar of talents, imagining endless revenge fantasies where the frat boys drove them to award ceremonies and begged them for autographs and cast-off groupies. There were the heavy girls as well, mothering the pretty girls and keeping the boys at bay, striving to appear weightless in their polka-dot scrunchies, thick glasses, and wide, wide crocheted cardigans. They were all feminists, of course, hoping to turn the more popular girls against men and so cripple the competition. There was always the one eating disorder girl as well, who levered her skeletal frame up and down the stairs like an asexual praying mantis. Being perfectly normal and friendly, letting the madness of her body run riot through the shocked senses of everyone else. She snacked constantly, forcing everyone to assume a brutal, bloody purge at 3 a.m. She was neither accommodated nor avoided, but seemed to just pass through people. There were the unabashed boy crazy girls, never as much as the reverse, who swarmed attractive men and leaned in and laughed huskily and touched forearms whenever remotely possible. These girls always aimed at men above their station, subsidizing their scant value with easy sexual access. They got handsome men to indifferently sleep with them. They were used and discarded like paper plates, but never learned their lessons. They usually clogged the pipeline to the tribe of heavy girls, who accepted their broken selves with the green venom of blaming only men for the bad decisions of women. In earlier times, the boy crazy girls would have settled into plump, lower middle class fertility and food delivery community building in these corrupt end times. Ooh, they got sanded down by desire and greed into splintered fragments of their former selves, doomed to dissatisfaction and backward revising dreams of a potential for commitment from alphas they could never have actually realized. There was, increasingly, the room, or sometimes entire floor, of druggies. From the mild cases who tried to make the overgenial crowd laugh by pretending to be surprised when they found their feet, to the more hardcore, thousand-yard stare cases who might be up for 3 days in a row due to their blind consumption of unmarked pills that scored them strange, satanic social points. Indifferent to survival, careless for the future, they escalated the "I was so drunk" crowd by embracing the "I woke up in a hospital getting my stomach pumped" crowd, which was not destined to remain a crowd for very long. This was a world without ethics, where the media demons had separated the young from any and all wisdom accumulated by their elders. Nothing moral could be learned, so everything had to be reinvented, like mammals starting over as amphibians, or fish perhaps, or even further back. The grim evolution of hard-won lessons over tens of thousands of years were all cast aside, and the rules that had prevented problems were scorned and discarded because those problems were rarely to be seen. And the young turned into mad souls who tore down the walls that kept the sea at bay because the town had not been flooded in living memory. Youth was considered beautiful in both body and wisdom, a combination that has never existed in the history of this or any other world. These desperate young were like water pouring on the top of a mountain. They each cascaded in predetermined but unpredictable rivulets and rivers down the jagged rocky wastes of the mountainside, pooling and spilling and overflowing in the endless gravity of their untutored hedonism, aiming for what felt good in the moment, what satisfied lust and desire and status and envy today, tonight, now. Like cunning apes trying to pick zoo locks, any escape was accidental, joyful, and utterly unreproducible. What worked yesterday never worked tomorrow. But habits are hard to break, so decaying repetition and blind hope was all they had. They were like children who refused to learn how to play billiards and just hit the ball stupidly hard in the hopes of randomly producing a cool shot that could be cheered for its one-time accidental brilliance. This was the second time that Robert met Helen. And it was this meeting that sealed their fates, or rather cemented the fact that all their prior vanities and avoidances had now set their iron wheels on the train tracks of inevitability. She was a goddess, pure and simple. All the avatars of uncanny valley plastic surgery beauty that infested the minds and loins of the young in the age of endless CRT screens seemed to manifest in her form, like a fractal key turning an impossible lock. Helen's beauty was a snapshot, a scalding tattoo on Robert's empty heart, a super stimulus that jolted his deadened nerves back into jumpy life. Helen was throwing her head back and laughing, a perfect tendon in her neck, inviting a sudden jugular nuzzle. She was surrounded by a gaggle of mid-tier boys, doubtless gathering fantasies for later, rather than imagining a real chance in the here and now. Immediately, Robert wanted to position himself in the best possible light, his mind and heart detached from his body, as they so often did, and raced around the room like a novice director, trying to find the best combinations of lighting, companionship, activities, gestures, and expressions to place the leading man in the most positive light. Should I be drinking, swigging, pounding my fellow pirates on the back, and roaring over past hilarities? Now, she would view that as a cliche. Should I try to draw a bevy of mids around me, like a dank moat she would have to step over? Should I stand in the corner and brood, frat boy Heathcliff style, full of secrets and superiority and mystery, bound to the bottom but somehow still above it all? Should I be in a rush to leave and brush past her and pretend to be surprised? Have someplace much better to be, maybe flatter her by postponing my next adventure? How do I get Helen to know that I'm not with Chloe anymore? Is that even better? Maybe she likes to steal boyfriends. Should I perform some physical feat? Bench press? A bench, perhaps? No, that's way too caveman. What if she's... And I've known pretty girls like this. What if she's drawn to the meat man muscular type? Should I bump chests with the chug monster wearing the Metallica t-shirt? Robert glanced at Helen with all the tentative fear of a man trying to stare at an eclipse. He had to absorb her mood and purpose and nature, but he couldn't linger on her visage for fear that she would glance at him and see his confused plotting and sneer in utterly justified contempt. Robert took a deep breath, trying madly, like all overthinkers, to calm the cocaine hamsters in his endless brain wheels and let his instincts take over. But when he contacted his second brain, his gut, well, it was telling him to flee. He glanced again at Helen, but she was gone. Oh, no, he thought in panic. I can't go scanning for her now. That's so desperate. He had a sudden vision of radar operators in Dover in 1940 squinting for incoming German bombers. Something poked him in the back. He thought it was Derek, but his laconic friend was trying to manage his social anxiety by feverishly drinking in a dark corner. He turned around, and Helen was smiling at him. He smiled back. I changed my number, she called out. Oh? Yeah, sorry, I handed you my digits in Wasaga, and then I had to change my number. Occupational hazard, I suppose, but I wasn't playing you. Rob, was it?
Yeah,
said Rob, Should I pretend I don't remember her name? No, no, no. Too obvious. Too cringe. Helen, nice to see you again. Where's your girlfriend? We broke up. Oh, not that day on the beach, I hope. Helen bit her lip. Robert really liked that she did not pretend to be anything other than the bombshell she was. I'm not vain, but I've seen it before. False modesty is a form of hypocrisy. Is that a quote? She laughed. I'm not that smart. I read it somewhere. I suppose it takes some brains to appreciate it, though. Why did you change your number? Helen wrinkled her nose. She had one of those faces that looked fantastic, even when distorted. I had a stalker. Oh, gosh. Really? She smiled quizzically. I'm not sure what to make of your surprise. But yeah, flowers on the porch, endless calls, bad poems in my inbox, dragons and desire like ELO lyrics. It's also copy-paste. Everyone is so original. What? How long did that go on for? Helen shrugged. It's a predictable pattern. Interest, charm, devotion, obsession, talking, rage. Then they quit, latch onto someone else. You should get married. Helen laughed sarcastically. Get a nice brute of a protector. Why should that be my life? It's not my fault men have the self-restraint of a bonobo. It was just a thought. Who should I marry? Who would you choose for me here? What is your type? No, 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 no. You said I needed protection. Find me a guardian. Robert glanced around the dank and hazy room. The massive bearded guy was chugging a silver canned beer sideways. Robert pointed. He would protect you, but then you'd have to marry another guy to protect you from him. Helen laughed. Nah, I'd have to hire someone to protect him from his alcoholism. He'd tell me he was just a social drinker, but then he'd be desperate to go to a party every night of the week. I quit smoking last year. I always told myself I was only a social smoker, but I realized I was striking up conversations just so I could have a cigarette. And that just got you more stalkers. She nodded thoughtfully. Yeah, I remember you being smarter than the average bear. Well, I guess you'd have to be protected either by strength or money. Some guy who could wrestle a gator or a big house with big walls and a private driver. Why a private driver? The prettier the girl, the worse driver she is. Helen laughed. So my driver should not be a pretty woman. She'd have to be a better driver than you. You give the most convoluted compliments, Mr. Robert. Who do you know at the party? No, too boring. Try again. No, you go. Helen pursed her lips, unoffended. Did you break up with your girlfriend because of me? In other words, am I going to become a stalker? Well, I'll tell you two things. First, no, we did not break up because of you, but because of me. And second, I did not know that you had changed your number, because you never called. Right. Helen paused for a moment. A man with a very thin mustache tried to hand her a drink, but she waved him away impatiently. What about you caused the breakup? Robert leaned in. My ambition. She laughed. No, that's not it. I don't want to talk about my last girlfriend. So? Neither do I. But a girl who collects stalkers like psycho beanie babies has to do a little vetting. So, I'm in the running? A smart, good-looking, ambitious guy like you? Remember what I said about false modesty, Mr. Rob? What do you want to know? What about you ended the relationship? Robert shook his head slowly. That's a great question. Stalling is not an answer. What if I don't know? Helen did not bother to reply. Sorry, said Robert. Yeah, I know. Can I tell you outside? Helen hesitated, then nodded. She took him by the hand, which felt unbearably intimate, and led him through the kitchen, out the screen door, and down to the bowels of the lower garden, where the theater kids were showing off various accents and sword fight moves. Helen turned to him and waited, expectantly. Something about the placid nature of her expression pulled the truth from Robert like bubbles rising in beer. Yeah, it was me, he said simply. She didn't make me look good enough. She was recreational, like a bookmark. How is a bookmark? Started Helen, then shook her head rapidly. How long did you know that? I never really thought of it. Robert's voice suddenly caught. My brother is a drug addict. Like, he kind of was, then he wasn't, now he's kind of in between. I don't know if he'll ever be himself again, Helen. She nodded slowly. I'm so sorry. She gestured at the house, at the pulsing lights and blowing curtains. Everyone has their sad story and just dances around. So that's why you have this strange, sudden depth at times. Were you close? When we were young, yeah. Isn't that what everyone says? We played all the time as kids. Together. I guess it becomes a competition after puberty. You're after the same things, maybe? I've never been overweight, but he constantly called me fatty. Oh, but bro had some bad acne, not gonna lie. Being the more attractive sibling has its trials, said Helen distantly. I'm not sure how comfortable either of us is in our own skin. Skins? So he did drugs. What do? Girls? Robert barked a laugh. No. Not really. Study, maybe? My dad is a striver. My mother, too, though she mostly does it by encouraging my dad, nagging him almost. Robert sang softly. Maybe you're just like my mother. She's never satisfied. My parents were strivers, murmured Helen. How did they overcome that? Just gave up? It's not the same as acceptance. No, it's not. Echoed Robert simply. But about Chloe, I always talked about being ambitious, but it was just a mating display. Cringe, I know. But then, like, I saw you and, my God, it all suddenly became real. The prize, whispered Helen. Like I was going to have to get my shit together, you know? Not waste my potential. That would be depressing as hell. Is your father happy? He's happy if Mom is happy. Robert laughed suddenly. You have some truth spell on me, you witch. It was Helen's turn to laugh. Now stop avoiding and tell me why you broke up with Chloe. She shrugged. Or don't. She deserved better. And I deserved more. Helen waited. She needed someone who was there just for her. And I wanted someone who would be better for my future. Pretty girls are money machines. I stalked you, you know. Robert blinked. What? I watched you from a distance. Chloe was pretty, you know. Is. Maybe handsome boys are money machines. Ah, but the combination. The power couple. What were you looking for? Helen smiled. There was a bit of chemistry on the beach, no? Yes. Just getting the lay of the land? Competition? Do you really have competition? Helen shook her head. You'd be surprised. I've lost out to a few good girls. She was a good girl. Is. And here you are. I feel kind of cursed. Robert bit his lip. Sorry, not you, not here. Like, I want to just stride the world. Not for history, I'm not that crazy. He thumped his chest. Me, big man on campus, in business. I can't imagine being happy without that. I'd feel totally cursed. But that means a life of discontent. Striving, climbing, never satisfied. No lazing on the couch. Going from an ice bath to work to the gym to dinners surrounded by super strategic small talk, you know? Beauty is the same damn thing, said Helen softly. What the hell am I supposed to do with it? I'm hungry all the time. I have to work out, like I have to. and your ambition can last your whole life. What do I get? 5 years? Maybe 10? No, I know I'll look good when I'm older, but it's not the same. The innards keep aging. The eggs die every day, 90% gone when I'm 30, and... I don't know. This is weird for our first real conversation. Robert almost giggled. Hell, it might be my first real conversation ever. Helen smiled without mirth. Everyone envies you, like the poor little rich girl. It's a burden. Like if you were really loaded, maybe you are, you could dress down and show up on the bus. I can't really hide anything about me. The plain girls envy me. I envy the plain girls. They envy the attention I get. I envy the attention they get, you know, because it's just for them. Poor little pretty girl, murmured Robert. A sudden sparkle came into her eyes. Ah, but you're never allowed to complain, right? It's like everyone is dying of cancer, so you're not allowed to whine that you might need glasses. I think that the least unsatisfying life is where you're the most honest about your ambitions. Like us. Tonight. Robert threw back his head and laughed. This is like the most romantic and least romantic conversation I can imagine. We're literally talking about a kind of relationship, but we're haggling like Moroccan street vendors. Helen's eyes narrowed. How has feeling your way forward worked out for you so far? Or me? She leaned forward suddenly. Why didn't you call? How do you know I didn't? I got a second line. Is that technically changing your number? Close enough. I didn't want to lie, said Robert simply. What do you mean? I didn't want to talk about Chloe, and I wasn't sure if you saw her. Helen nodded. Complicated. So I ended up being kind of misleading. Did you have a stalker? Yeah. Yes. And I should have dropped the number, but I kept it because I wanted you to call. I'd get like 20 messages and then have to listen to Stalker Boy 20 times hoping you'd left a message. I felt dirty. Robert's voice caught again. She deserved better. Why? Why? Oh, please don't be one of those guys. Ugh. They're everywhere, who babies women and thinks we're all just lost poor angels only acted upon by male decisions. I don't know her from Eve, but I guarantee you she wanted your ambition, your money to come, your status, your looks. Like my mom, whispered Robert. Get on the couch, barked Helen in a faux German accent. Please, don't strip Chloe of her choices. We're not angels, Mr. Robert. We have our greed and vanity as well. She paused. That's my advice anyway. His mind blissfully blank, Robert leaned down, took Helen in his arms, and kissed her deeply. Her mouth opened. The theater kids screamed and started quoting Romeo and Juliet.